Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, the leaves on the trees. What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Ty Bubba Horowitz. And, you know, I go and scavenge and scour all over the world to find the toughest guests. And, well, somebody now who actually was part of the Federal Reserve, and you know Bubba's take on the Federal Reserve, but now independent, money strong, Danielle DiMartino Booth, money strong. What's up, Danielle?
What's up, Bubba? How are you?
I'm great. What's going on in the world? Tell us about money strong. I read it. I love it. Tell us all about it.
Well, it came down to money weak or money strong. So you see which direction I took.
Makes sense.
You know, it was, you know, when I left the Fed, I advised Richard Fisher for, almost a decade. And your listeners may be familiar with Richard Fisher. He was a little hawkish. Thank you. And when I was coming out of the Fed, you know, I was thinking, what am I going to call myself now that I can be whatever I want to be? And those two words kind of came to mind. So I'm money strong.
And you are.
One woman operation.
You are money strong. And it's really, you know, I get a great kick out of watching you on air. Danielle is on Fox and she's all over and she's got her own company. You got to check her out. But I mean,
I've got my own YouTube channel.
Oh,
woohoo.
Wow. Go give it. How do we get there?
www.demartinobooth.com. I promise that'll be my only plug. But go sign up. I'm free to subscribe.
You can plug anything you want. That's, you know what? my listeners love the guests I bring, and, you know, we hit them hard and we go after them. All right, so let's look at what's going on in the overall world. And since, you know, a couple of weeks ago was Brexit, what was your take on the whole thing of Brexit, and what was your whole take on what's going to happen from the result of Brexit?
So, yeah, I think that Brexit is going to test the hand of the world's central bankers. You know, I get asked all the time, when is it going to be game over? Well, take last week, for example. News hit the wires in Thursday trading that the world's central bankers were riding to the rescue again, and we're going to pump all these billions of euros into the Italian banking system, and China's going to build up their railways, and more money, more cowbell. That's my favorite thing. That's my favorite way to describe central bankers in this unconventional era, is it's always about more cowbell, that old skit on Saturday Night Live. So when people ask me the question, when is it going to be game over, Danielle? My answer is when some central banker somewhere in the world announces emergency stimulus measures and their version of Mario Draghi's, we're going to do whatever it takes, and the markets don't react. Then it's game over.
And I think that that's probably coming sooner than later. But so let's walk back in history a little bit, because I was originally, back in the day, and I've been trading since 1980, okay? And I was always like a center guy in the Fed. I was never against them. I was never really for them. And I thought that Greenspan did a crappy job myself. And again, these are my opinions, not Danielle's. She can comment, but these are my opinions. But I thought, I think each subsequent Fed chair has done worse. But I'm not a big fan now. And now I'm actually an end the Fed kind of guy, because I watch what they do, and to me, they don't do anything really that good, and they're too busy trying to work out of theory, out of a book, instead of understanding that the United States of America is actually a business and needs to be run like a company. Would you care to comment?
So look, I'm not in Ron Paul's camp. I don't think we should end the Fed. I don't think we're a banana republic or a third world country, and I think we happen to need a central bank to safeguard the value of the dollar. Period. End of story. Single mandate. Okay. Employment mandate, blah, blah, blah. These are all huge conflicts. And if, you know, if I was God for a day and I could re-engineer the Fed like we learned in business school, let's re-engineer the corporation and reinvent it. If I was God for a day, I would turn the Fed upside down. I would hire PhDs in finance that would be attractive to Wall Street firms. I would go from over 1,000 to a handful of PhDs. And I would take all that money you're saving on people who don't have to eat their cooking. They're not recipients of zero interest rate policy. Central bankers have defined benefit plans, pensions for life. They don't have to suffer it at their own hands. But I would take all the money that you could save from getting rid of all these PhDs, and I would hire the best that money could buy to not always be three steps behind the banks. Because greed's never going away. And some entity somewhere is going to have to be a policeman on banks, and I think it should be the Fed. But again, this is a completely different Fed than what was envisioned in 1913.
Now, there's some who say that the Fed is actually a little shaky, and there's a few things that go on there that probably shouldn't go on, but we won't get into that. But I want to get your...
Like campaign contributions? Yeah, that. Mm-hmm.
I want to really get, why is there a need for a Fed? I mean, they have not, in my opinion, now this is my opinion only, they have not stabilized the dollar. All they've done is weaken it. So what good does that do me when they continue to weaken the dollar? I mean, the more money, it's just like taking a stock and doing a secondary offering. Every time they weaken the dollar, every time they print money, they're weakening my dollar. What good is it?
Well, they are weakening your dollar because they're misguided in their policies completely. They don't look, they're studying, you brought it up earlier, they're doing this out of a textbook that maybe they've written, by the way. Monetary policy should not be about something theoretical that you can't touch and be tangible. Like Warren Buffett, if I can kick the tires, then I understand the company and I want to buy it. Monetary policy should be made by people who are practitioners, who understand the ramifications of interest rate policy, people who eat their cooking, as I said earlier, and you get people like that running a central bank, and they're going to take care of the greenback.
Okay. Well, I would hope so. So now, you know,
Now, obviously, this will never happen. You can only imagine I'm public enemy number one at the Federal Reserve.
And with good reason, because you speak your mind, and they don't like people that speak their mind over there. They like to have...
Well, certainly not former Fed people who speak their mind. You're supposed to come out and be deferential. That's the word.
Well, I'm glad you're not deferential, because we've got so much to go over today, and we're not going to make it all about the Fed, but, you know, I do have a bone to pick with them, and you saw some of the things I've written in the past, and again, I'm not convinced that you're right, but I could live with that as a change from my perspective first. Like, I could say, okay, let's see if they can actually correct it, but I do see so many flaws, and it's even the hidden tax of inflation that we keep seeing trying to be added. Now, again, you know, our great friend Janet Yellen continues to say we don't have any inflation, but all I know is my food costs more and my gas costs more, and I know that's what I spend money on every day, and my $100,000 a year I spend for college tuition. So
that's right.
To me, it's...
They're not measuring it.
They don't measure anything. But we're going to step out here for a break. We got her. Money Strong, Danielle DiMartino Booth. God, that's a mouthful. But she is on top of it. You got to catch her on Fox. You can catch her all over the place. She does a lot of media, but she's really Money Strong. She's strong, too. Can't you tell? She's kicking my ass already. But this is the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode and you want to hear guests like Danielle, you go to libertytalk.fm. And download the podcast. We've just passed 225,000. I need to get to 300 and then to 1 million. So I need your help. So make sure you go to libertytalk.fm. Check out the Bubba Show. Actually, check out BubbaTrading.com. And you'll get all the great things I'm doing and get to read what I write. In the meantime, this is the Bubba Show. Top Bob Archer. Step out here for a break, and we'll be right back with more from Danielle. Right after the break. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong, ex-Fed, still a defender, not a total defender, but still a defender of the Fed. And, you know, maybe by the time we're done, I can switch her over, but actually I'm not even going to try. All right, so Danielle, you said that there needs to be some change, and we both agree there. And I could live with your philosophy, but, of course, that would have to make change all over. And the real problem that I see from my standpoint is that their policies are ridiculous and they're really just bubble builders, but they live on that Keynesian economic theory, which, and I'm not saying the other is better, okay? I'm saying there's got to be a better balance, because John Maynard Keynes in 1928 said there'll never be another crash in our time. And of course, he only missed by 12 or 13. And then Andrew Mellon said in September of 1929, the high tide of prosperity will carry us through. And of course, we know neither of those have happened. But we are a prospering nation. We continue to grow and get our way out. But how are we going to get out of this mess?
You tell me. I mean, this is a pickle. I mean, you named the asset class. I don't care if you're talking about commercial real estate, high-end residential real estate, if you're talking about stocks, bonds, wine, diamonds, you name it. All the asset classes are overvalued. I mean, when it was the dot-com bubble, we kind of knew these were companies with no profit that were being floated, that were worthless, and we kind of had this, look, I can identify the enemy. There it is. And then it was housing after that. And you're like, some schmo who makes $40,000 is buying 5 homes with 125% LTV loans. And, okay, Houston, we might have a problem here. And it was unique and identifiable. But you tell me, I'll throw this back in your court. You tell me if there's anything that is singular about this particular bubble. I would beg to differ, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, I mean, this bubble is built on debt like every other bubble. I mean, we've only replaced the housing bubble with auto debt. Auto debt is twice the size of the housing bubble. That doesn't count student loan debt that we have. And the only true way out is to raise rates. The only true way out of this whole mess is to raise interest rates, let the stock market fall, let the economy cleanse itself out of all the crap that's out there right now, and say, okay, fine. Because the only way that the banks are ever going to provide any liquidity to anybody is by making enough on the spread. And right now that spread is too small and it's too close to the bond rate. So why would they lend me money when they can get almost a point less by giving it to the full faith and credit? So the only way to get out is to raise interest rates and to continue to raise them and let the market collapse.
I wrote 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, excuse me, I wrote the following thing, and boy, did I get flack. I said that the Federal Reserve should take the opportunity of the next recession to come public and say, I confess, zero interest rate policy failed. We're going to raise the floor to 2%, and we're never going to breach it again, ever. We're going to make sure that the banking system can function properly, naturally, and that markets can be price discovery mechanisms, and we're never going to monkey with zero interest rates again, ever. And sign it away. Put it in the Constitution. Just make a vow to never breach that floor again. And boy, did I get some heat.
Well, they always breach the Constitution. I mean, listen, they breach the Constitution because they're only supposed to be able to make coins, not dollars. But they turned my silver certificates that I could use to turn in for a Morgan silver dollar, and they turned into a note, which is only a loan. Okay, and then they don't have enough money in the banks to cover a run. I heard some ridiculous guy last week on air saying the banks have never been in better shape. And I go, okay, that's always the case until they're not, right? Everybody's good until they ain't. So now,
I mean, UniCredit, Italy's largest bank. I'm sorry, Italy is not a small economy. It's not a huge economy, but it's not a small economy either. Their largest bank is a penny stock.
Well,
we got problems.
Well, of course we got problems. Look, one of the problems you have, and let me get your take on this, is when you allow somebody to print money, okay, and make money. Now, I understand the lender of last resort. I understand all that stuff. You know, we're all taught that, and we're all brainwashed in school about, you know, Keynesian economics, and that you got to continue to push and push. And I go, okay, fine. But now here you are, okay, with a dollar that's been rattled to relatively nothing. And now, to me, it appears that the central banks are like in collusion together around the globe. You've got this dope, what's her name, Christine Lagarde at the IMF. You've got the WTO. They're all nuts, and they're all clueless, and they could all care less about the average guy on the street. And in my opinion, it says the middle class never left recession. From the day they said it was over, it hasn't been over, which is why economists have no clue either. What do you say?
Look, I completely agree. And the collusion that you talk about, that's what's made this so toxic. That's what's made this bubble. So they deny. But you can't tell me that we've got a more systemic situation on our hands today than we did when the problem was pretty much confined to subprime U.S. mortgages. Granted, they had bled into everything and everywhere. But speaking of the IMF, why on earth would they be sending a team into Kazakhstan? Oh, wait, it's because frontier markets have been able to access the dollar bond market in recent years. Some of these markets don't happen to have banking systems. You can't tell me it's not more systemic this time around.
Of course it's more. Listen, I couldn't agree with you more. It is more systemic, and this is my problem. But, of course, this is part two of the problem, or part 72. It doesn't really matter. But, I mean, you've now taken and forced everybody in the world that wants to put their money somewhere. If you want a chance to get some yield, you're forced into the equity markets. Now, I'm a big fan of U.S. equities over time. I mean, over time, they do go up 9% year over year. They don't go up every year 9%. And if you know what you're doing, you can build a nice portfolio and reap the benefit of the market. But now you've forced everybody, and especially the elderly that are just trying to retire, to take their hard-earned money, which they were hoping they'd get 4 or 5% or 6% from the bank, and take their pension or Social Security and let it go, and they'd be able to live a comfortable life. Now, everybody's at risk, and we both know that right now this market is what we would call in the greed phase, where people are buying on margin. People who can't afford to buy stock are buying stuff that they can't afford to own, yet because of the cheap rates and cheap margin, they're up there buying, and eventually it all has to end, and it has to end poorly. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Grandma, go buy some junk bonds. Does she have a choice? No, she doesn't have a choice. But it's all smoke and mirrors. Valuations are smoke and mirrors, care of the Fed. Look, Meredith was not wrong. She was just brutally early, and she put a timestamp. That doesn't mean that the state of Illinois and the state of Chicago and Rhode Island and New Jersey and, oh, I don't know, a big chunk of California, that doesn't mean that any of these municipalities and states can actually afford to make good on these pensions. I mean, this is a mess. I was highly criticized when I recently said it sure would be nice if that same grandma could go down to her local bank and take out a five-year jumbo CD for 5%. And some Yahoo tweeted me back, great, we want to go back to the days of hyperinflation and 20% mortgage rates. And I said, no, maybe just 2001, because that's the last time you could get a five-year CD with a 5% yield safely and sleep at night, and inflation was nowhere near double digits back then.
Well, you know, we have so obviously so many issues that have been created by the monetary policy and by the government. I mean, look, I'm not just blaming it 100% on the Fed. I mean, you know, the government has a big blame in this as well. And
it takes two to tango.
And the whole situation, I mean, I said back, believe it or not, in 2010, I said, well, why don't we take all this money that we're going to print, and why don't we just rebuild America and create in the United States the war effect? Because we both know that after every war, what happens? The economy booms because we have to go rebuild the country. Well, why don't we rebuild our own country? Okay. And put all these people to work, because the biggest problem we have, in my opinion, is that the group my age, 45 to the upper end, which is my side, 65, are guys that are unemployed, uneducated, and they're not going to learn how to run a computer and how to do any of that crap. So what they want to do is we need to put them to work rebuilding America, the roads, bridges, and levees. And then all of a sudden, what do you have? You've got guys working, making money. And you know what people do when they have money? They spend it. And when they spend it, it stimulates the economy. That would be much too simple, and it's obviously not in the textbook of whatever these stupid policies are using, but I am with Money Strong's Danielle DiMartino Booth, and she's also the Money Strong. So it's great to have her on. Check her out, and her website is DiMartinoBooth.com. Make sure you check that out and her YouTube channel. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Make sure when you miss an episode, LibertyTalk.fm, you go download it and get me over 300,000. So I'm begging you, go do it for me. This is The Bubba Show. Top of Orange. We'll see you back here right after the break.
You're so delicious. You're so, so.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Danielle DiMartino Booth from Money Strong. Make sure you check her out, and you see her on Fox. You see her all over the place. She's doing great. She brings good stuff, and she was part of the Fed. Oh, no. But anyways, so all right, Danielle, so we have a whole bunch of stuff coming on, and I brought up some
Former Fed.
So we talked about a couple of things, and I know we were talking during the break, and you had a couple of thoughts. So go ahead and bring GE to light. Bring good things to light for us.
So you're talking about 45 to 65 year old men with no college education. Let me think. Where were they employed? Oh, that's right, North Dakota. And where could the government have kept them employed? In what industry? Had they built out, for example, the Keystone Pipeline? I mean, at some point, energy independence is not going to be a bad idea. Hey, I live in Texas. We're all about energy here. Instead, it gets all mucked up in politics, and you end up with really angry voters. And that's what we're staring at today. Consider that every single year of the shale revolution produced $125 billion per annum economic benefit, which, by the way, outweighed the $100 billion per annum benefit of falling gasoline prices. And yet the economists sat there scratching their head, and I just don't understand why consumption's not picking up more. I don't get it. I can't connect the dots. Well, it's because you created really high-paying jobs for people who don't have a PhD from MIT. And that was great for the economy. And the Corps of Engineers, to back your point, has trillions of dollars of repairs that can be done that will improve the long-term productivity of this country. And this is low-hanging fruit, easy economic policy. You'll get reelected. Just do it. Just do it.
So you say that there will be consequences from the $12 trillion global experiment. What do you say? What are the consequences going to be?
Yeah, there'll be consequences. I'm not sure what Ray Dalio was describing when he called it a beautiful deleveraging, but McKinsey corrected him. $60 trillion tacked on. Now we've got $200+ trillion in outstanding debt, and you've got central banks with a $12+ trillion problem on their hands. They don't call it a problem. You ask Janet Yellen in front of Congress about her baby, her balance sheet. No, 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 not until we normalize interest rates. No, 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 no. Well, when's that going to happen? Oh, wait, I know. Never, as long as she's in charge and other people like her are in charge. But look, Japan, the Bank of Japan is pretty much halfway there in terms of owning half the ETFs in the country. And my question to you is, what's going to happen when these central banks run out of things to buy?
The economy,
seriously.
The economies are going to melt down. Listen, there's going to be a major meltdown because nobody... What I don't understand, and I'll answer your question, what I don't understand is how we didn't learn from Japan. They've been doing this for 30 years, and it never has worked. So why did we think that it would work here? I never could understand Ben Bernanke's theory when he was sweating and breaking out in zits about the whole crash when he could have just easily just let things happen and let markets take care of themselves. I don't get it because the best thing that prices assets is markets. They know what the value is because what is value? What are you going to buy? What do you want to buy? What will you pay for it? And what will I sell it for? The exchange of wealth takes place. So I don't get the whole sweating over this whole thing when, you know what? Sometimes companies fail because I know one thing, Danielle. If you and I did what the Federal Reserve would be doing, we would be in one of two places, either jail or bankruptcy court, because the central banks and the Federal Reserve are running the biggest Ponzi scheme in the history. Okay, but yet,
of course they are. The markets were given a breath of fresh air back when we had the taper tantrum, and they just pitched a fit. We're not going to have it. We're not going to let you taper your $85 billion in purchases. We're not doing it. And then 48 hours later, they're like, okay, we'll let you do it. We can price this in. We're markets. That's our job. And what does Bernanke do? He blinks. Back when that taper tantrum was going on, there were people like me with my hair on fire and Richard Fisher, and he's got a lot of hair with his hair on fire, saying we don't need to be dithering about this taper. We need to rip the Band-Aid off, let markets understand that we don't bend to their will, and begin the normalization process when all of the economic indicators appear to be gaining momentum.
Let me
sail into the wind.
Okay. So you said this a couple times today, and please explain to me and the listeners, what would you consider normalization?
So again, I would consider a floor to be 2%. And again, to what we're talking about right now, that markets understand how to price things. Well, that means if you look at the long-term history, you're talking about 4.5%.
And
normal.
That should be where we should, and that's my point. See, we should be having higher interest rates because the systems can accommodate, because everybody can accommodate, because if you put people to work, if you create entrepreneurs, which they have totally eliminated because everybody's buying back their own stock instead of actually putting things to work, we've cut down on all production. We've got nothing going on right now in this country that is worth diddly. And the funny thing is I don't know if you recall, I don't know, it was a week or two ago that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were arguing about bringing jobs over, and all the analysts were saying, well, but it costs so much more. And I go, hold it. Wait a second. It doesn't cost that much more. Because the first thing is, when you only look at the cost of the employee, yes, we're much more expensive. However, when you manufacture out of the country, you have freight, you have duty. And I actually wrote an article on the iPhone. Do you know that if we assembled the iPhone here, okay, and put our people to work here, the cost it would add to that iPhone would be about 6% more to assemble the iPhone here. Now, you tell me if a 6% increase in a phone that most companies give away anyways is going to make that big of a difference when you get all the more spending that's going to come from the employees that are working to build that phone. You tell me.
Look, I'm going to add to your argument. I'm going to pile on here. Automation is a game changer, a huge game changer. And it won't be pretty for the uneducated, but it will allow more manufacturing to be done here in this country. because of all of the other cost offsets that you detailed. Automation, to me, should be what seals the deal, because it'll take that 6% and it'll make it go away.
And that is my point. And, of course, our great leader, Mr. President Obama, he's certainly in front of the camera glorifying how good these jobs are. Now, you've been around for a while, but I remember a job prints of 600, 800,000 in a month. And I remember people actually making real money. Now, the jobs we're creating are garbage. And I guarantee you, if you took from 10 years ago or 15 years ago, you took all the working income and added up and you did the same thing today, the income then would have been greater than it is today for everybody who's working. What do you think?
Look, that's just data. I remember I worked on the inside for almost 10 years. That's data. Median incomes in this country last 10 years, flat as a pancake. And you want to know why? You brought it up. You said it just a few minutes ago. Companies have been playing with their balance sheet instead of creating future opportunities in the form of investment. And nobody, I don't care who you are, unless you're God, can tell you and me how this is all going to end. A lost generation of capital expenditures. This will not end well, and it's all been fed by the Fed.
I like that, fed by the Fed. Well, we know it's not going to end well. We know it's a bubble. I mean, now, let me ask you this. We got about a minute or so left in this group here, but why can't an economist or somebody admit that this is a bubble and that we need to fix it? Why is it they continue to hide from this?
Well, their inflation models don't tell them anything's happening here. Nothing to see here. Move on. Look, it's not, you know, in some cases, and here's the scary part, and we'll end on this note, they believe what they're saying. They've drank their own Kool-Aid.
Well, their Kool-Aid has some happy drugs in there, because they certainly can't see. I don't understand. Now, I live in Deerfield, Illinois. Okay, it's a pretty, you know, it's a upper middle class suburb. It's always been the number one and number four high school in the state of Illinois. Not that that's any bargain today, but I mean, my house I bought at the absolute bottom of the market. I put in a bunch of money into it, and right now, if I wanted to get out, I would have to take about a 30% to 40% haircut on my house. I look around; there's a bunch of houses that are half constructed. There's a bunch of people not working, a bunch of people I know that aren't working and haven't worked for years. And yet we talk about how good the whole model and everything is performing. And I just want to know where we have this great performance. I mean, that's something we'll talk about when we come back from the break. But I don't see this great performance. And I see a bigger problem down the road, which we'll also talk about, which is in the pension systems. Because this is...
Let's touch on that. I got a hot button.
Look at I got her going. So anyways, we are with Danielle DiMartino Booth, Money Strong. And you can tell she knows her stuff and she's not afraid to say it either. Make sure you check her out. She's got her own YouTube channel. So make sure you check that out. And she's going to give me the name and her Twitter handle. What is your Twitter handle? Hurry up.
At DiMartino Booth.
Check her out on Twitter. This is the Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz. Make sure when you miss an episode, libertytalk.fm, and download that show, as well as The Sporting Edge, which airs on Saturday. We're going to stop by here for a break. We'll be back with more from Danielle right after the break. The Bubba Show, Top Bubba Horowitz. We will be right back.
10 miles from town. I was proud.
Welcome
after
back
10,000 beers and 28 years.
Danielle Martino Booth, Money Strong. And again, you can catch her on Fox. You can catch her on her Twitter handle. What's your YouTube channel again, my dear?
It's right there on the website at www.dimartinobooth.com.
All right.
So just go click on videos, and you'll click right into the YouTube channel.
All right, well, we got your hot button, and it's one of my hot buttons because it really pisses me off. And let's just start with Social Security, because that's the easy one. That's the most flawed one. And that's the one that why they didn't change. You know, when Social Security was originally developed, it was the average living age was 62. They made the age 65 so that only a few people would have to support those who made it past that deadline. And of course, now the average living age is, I think, 77, but we're still at 65, and we're now paying out about $3 for every dollar they take in. And, of course, we know how that ends. It never ends well. Tell us what the hell's going on.
And we mock the French. because they want to have such young retirement ages. Hello? I mean, talk about the height of hypocrisy. And, of course, it's easy enough to not worry about Social Security because you don't really have to count it when you do the math. You don't have to incorporate that. Well, okay. Can we all go move off to La La Land? Is that how I get to pay my bills? With, like, Monopoly money? No. It's a mess. It's a ticking time bomb, and it's muy grande, and it will put the dollar itself at risk.
Well, I mean, I have a printing press in my basement. Don't you have one? Aren't you part of the Fed? You get to print your own money, and when there's a problem, you just go out and reach and get some more and devalue.
That was not my parting gift. I can assure you that was not my parting gift.
They didn't give you your own printing machine? Okay, so now, you know, the teachers' pensions. Now, I happen to know as a fact that in Illinois, which you mentioned earlier, obviously one of the most crooked states in the world, of course, because it always votes Democratic, so we know that there's a problem. But anyways, in Illinois, the state has not funded the teachers' pension since 1999. Okay? You know, they're counting on those investments that are going to continue to mount up and pile up. How? Mm-hmm. What's the answer?
Look, I'll give you a real quick story. This is the former global strategist at Morgan Stanley, and now he's the head strategist at PIMCO, Joaquin Fells. I'm up in his Canary Wharf offices in London, and I was meeting with my Bank of England counterparts about financial stability. This is a few years ago. I sit down, and I think, you know, we're going to talk about some really important stuff here. This guy's the head honcho at Morgan Stanley. So we're having dinner, crack of dawn. He looks across at me and he said, well, Danielle, why is the Texas Teachers Retirement Fund still assuming 8% rate of return assumptions? You know, here in England, by law, it's capped at 3.5%. So you don't have the risk of having asset liability mismatches. And I went, 8% doesn't make much sense, does it? Look, the pension system in this country, it is ground zero for moral hazard. Ground zero. These managers are aiming for the fences. They're pouring their money into private equity funds that are buying distressed commercial real estate, junk bonds, leveraged buyouts. And don't worry, they're private equity. Their long-term record's great. I'm sorry, but are they buying in at bargain levels right now? Todd, you tell me. That's what our pensions are doing. Talk about riots in the streets. The city of Denver cut their tulip budget. Well, that's kind of cute. And the Wall Street Journal wrote about it, and that's fine, because they're trying to make sure that top off that pension. So we're going to cut the tulip budget. What happens when the city of Chicago can't fund its police force? You tell me.
Well, I mean, again, this all goes back to the same problem when you continue to run a Ponzi scheme, whether you're the government or you're the Federal Reserve or a central bank around the world. We've seen the result. Now, I have said that there's going to be a revolt in this country, not necessarily a fighting revolt, but there'll be some sort of revolt. And I think we've seen some signs with the success of Bernie Sanders and the success of Donald Trump. And now we saw the Brexit exit, which, again, is just another sign that there's a lot of unrest around. But what I don't understand is, out of this great country, and America is the greatest, how is it that we have a potential convict running for president? I think that sums up the entire problem in a nutshell, okay? Because here you have somebody that's under investigation for something that if you or I did that, we'd be in jail. But yet,
look,
she's the nominee.
You can't even count on your fingers and toes anymore how many Republicans have turned coat and said, we back Hillary. And Hank Paulson himself, for heaven's sake. You want to know why?
Wall Street.
Because the status quo has kept everybody, our own elite, fat and happy. And they don't want anybody to take away the punch bowl. They don't want any change. I mean, poor Donald Trump, before somebody informed him that it was against the law, he said, you know, I'll fire Janet Yellen. And then one of his advisors said, excuse me, sir, that's against the law. You have to wait until her term ends in 2018. And he said, fine, whatever. Now I'm educated. I won't reappoint her.
That's better.
Trust me when I say that Hillary Clinton will put doves on into the two vacant seats on the Federal Reserve Board that make Janet Yellen look like she has rejected Keynes for good. That's how dovish they'll be. And we'll go to negative interest rates. And God help us all.
Well, I mean, I think we may go there anyways. I mean, the cards are already exposed that we have a clueless, gutless Fed that's going to go ahead and go to probably negative rates. And, I mean, you know, again, as you said, God help us all. And that will be a tragedy because, again, as you said earlier, when the markets don't react positively to the 0% or 0.25% rates, that's going to be a problem. And I think we're starting to see now, of course, we've had a big rally last week. And, you know, but I mean, that was expected. Right? Basically, we're still just trading in a big old range. It's not like we're going anywhere.
No.
We're just
treading water, treading water.
And as we
have been treading water since the Fed stopped expanding its balance sheet. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, now, all right, you got about a minute and a half. Fix it for me.
Look, redraw the lines, reinvent the Fed, take power away from the New York Fed, dispense it nationwide where the economy is growing, fire most of the PhDs, bring in people who know how to read a bank balance sheet, regulate the system, raise the floor on interest rates forever, vow to never breach it again to the downside, and move on and keep your dollar.
Okay. So, I mean, you mentioned a lot of good points, but why can't free markets determine what fair interest rates would be, whether they be a floor of 2% or not? I mean, wouldn't the markets determine what the right rate was?
Theoretically. But look, I don't want to go back to the mid-1800s when we have a depression every few years. I prefer a little bit more stability, and I think that a central bank with integrity, not run by a bunch of people who think they're actually doctors, I think if we had a good central bank that was grounded and was run by practitioners and people who could read, again, a bank balance sheet, I think we'd be a lot better off for it.
Okay, so what about audit the Fed? Should they be audited by an independent organization?
The Fed should be transparent. The Fed shouldn't be able to manipulate the minutes. Janet Yellen herself is on the record in 2008 transcripts as saying we should use the minutes as another tool to shape opinion. Did you see the tap dance that she did when a reporter asked her why the March meeting minutes had nothing to do with the March statement? She tripped all over her tongue because she couldn't tell the truth. She couldn't say, well, we used the minutes as a tool. We were manipulating the public.
Well,
The Fed should be much more transparent. And we don't need to wait 5 years for transcripts. Bunch of hooey. And term limits, by the way. Put term limits on Fed governors.
Hooey is my word. And this is Money Strong's Danielle DiMartino Booth. Thank you so much for spending the day with me, Danielle. I appreciate it. It's been great to have you on.
Pleasure is all mine.
What's your Twitter handle again?
At DiMartino Booth. Go follow me.
And what's your website?
www.dimartinobooth.com. Hey, I keep it consistent.
There you go. This is The Bubba Show, Top of Horts. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. You miss an episode, libertytalk.fm. Download it. The Bubba Show, Top of Horts. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody have a great day. Thank you.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.